This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Welcome to DSC's Campfires with Larry Wysoon, the unique blend of hunting, fishing, wildlife conservation, and the outdoor lifestyle. DSC's Campfires is brought to you by DSC, Conservation, Education, and Hunter Advocacy, Hornady, Accurate, Deadly, Dependable, Trigicon, Brilliant Aiming Solutions, Taurus, award-winning pistols and revolvers, Mossberg, American Built, American Strong, and the Red 55 Winery in Lindale, Texas, signature wines of Grammy Award-winning country artist Miranda Lambert, and owned by Rick and Beverly Lambert.
Welcome to DSC's Campfire. Here in a few moments, we'll join my old buddy, Mr. Ron Porter, a game warden from New Mexico and a hunting partner for, oh my gosh, probably close 40 years or so. But he and I shared many adventures together in the past, hunting in both here in Texas and in New Mexico, and dreamed about hunting a lot of other places together as well, too. Before we get into that episode, I have been reminding you about a book that Luke Clayton and I have done called Campfire Talk. Now, this book is available, and it's available through catfishradio.org, as well as a bunch of other places. But if you want an autographed copy, that's the best place to go to, is catfishradio.org. And there's a place there that you can click on to and order that book and leave us a message, and we'll make sure that we get the autograph book to you in a very timely manner, and particularly in time for Christmas. You know, it's a great Christmas gift that I think whoever reads it and whoever they pass it on to will enjoy. Luke and I had a great time writing that book, and in terms of using different chapters about hunting, fishing, outdoors, cooking, and we're so fortunate to get Mr. Jim Zumbo, a very dear friend of many years and hunting partner as well for so many years, to do the foreword for us. Then beyond that, at the same spot, you can also get a copy of a new book that I just did not very long ago, just in time for Christmas, called Deer Addictions. Now, this is a book that I use chapters, the articles that I've written over the past about hunting whitetail, mule deer, coos whitetail, Columbian blacktail, Sitka blacktail, just pretty much whitetail, of course, as well. A lot of whitetail, because I've had the opportunity to hunt them a little bit more than I have mule deer and some of the other North American big game species. But both those books are available through catfishradio.org. And if you place your order there, we'll get those out as soon as earthly possible. possible in time, hopefully for Christmas, if not well ahead of time. And I think you'll enjoy those books. They're entertaining, to at least we've been told they are. And there's a lot of good sound information about hunting and the different fishing and things that we did in the book with Luke. And then particularly in terms of lessons I've learned as far as deer hunting across North America is concerned, and in the deer addiction thing. And then truly, I've been addicted to deer hunting for a long time, many decades, if you will. So hopefully you'll enjoy those books. Let me know how you feel about them. You can get in touch with us at catfishradio.org as well, too, and a whole bunch of other places. But really appreciate your support on those books, and I know that you're going to like them, or at least I feel very strongly that you will. So now let's get on with the program, and we'll talk to you a little bit more about this next week as well, too, just to remind you about the books, but also to remind you about the Dallas Safari Club Convention that's coming up January 11th through 14th at the K. Bailey Hutchinson Center there in Dallas, Texas. I got a feeling Luke and I will be there, and maybe we can visit a little bit, and I'll be open to any hunting stories that you might have to tell me as well, too. And who knows? If we're really good, and I suspect they will be, maybe they'll show up in a book somewhere down the future. So let's join Ron Porter and me as Ron and I talk about some of his years as a game warden in New Mexico. Ron, when you were a kid, we were talking earlier about coal oil and getting hurt and wool rags. Tell me a little bit about the experience that you were talking about before we turned this thing on for this podcast.
Well, one of those things that, you know, it's one of those things you look back on and you wonder, how in the world did I survive all that as a child? Because generally now, if a child gets hurt, they rush into the emergency room. Our emergency room was the kitchen table.
The kitchen table.
You know, and if you sew up, well, no, you didn't have to be sewed up. Just soak it in cold oil and wrap it with a wool rag, and it'll be okay. And the funny thing about it, Larry, is it was.
It worked. You know, before we turned all this thing on, I remember I was telling a story about it when a little kid running around a dog pen chasing a dog from a dad to so a guy could see it and falling into the tin roof and nearly cut my arm off. I mean, there's blood spraying all over the place. And the first thing they did is my dad got a rag and wrapped it around there and started pouring coal oil on it. And the treatment was to kind of look, yep, it's still there, and until it healed up. But it was amazing how that coal oil worked.
Well, it's amazing because you often wonder, if it's still hanging on, it must be okay. You know, can you still use it? Well, you will be able to in a week or two. Yeah, don't worry
eventually.
About it. Yeah, it'll all work out. Trust me.
Sitting here today with Mr. Ron Porter. Ron and I go back many years, I think to about 1974 when we met in the Southern Lincoln National Forest. They're here in New Mexico. And I worked for the game department in Texas, and Ron worked for the game department here in New Mexico. And over the years, we've hunted a lot. A fair amount together.
Fair amount.
Never as much as we really wanted to, but we did get a chance to hunt together. And Ron, you've lived such a very interesting life from early beginnings to the years you spent as a game warden and as a supervisor and all that kind of stuff with the New Mexico Game Department. And then you and your wife, Marcia, too, became taxidermists along the way, as I recall. And,
well, that was because of you.
Oh, my goodness. That's my fault.
I didn't have anything to do with that. But you wrote a letter saying, well, I think you can be a taxidermist, and here's how you do it, A, B, C, and D. You forgot the rest of it, but we figured it out, and we wound up running a taxidermy shop for well over 20 years.
Over 20 years.
And let's be honest, she was the taxidermist. I did the skinning. I did the tanning. I'd sew it on the form, but if you wanted it to look right, that was her job.
That was Marcia's job. Marcia was an absolute fantastic
artist.
She
made an antelope look like an antelope.
Yes, she did. Or a mule deer look like a mule deer, or whatever it was the mount was of. She made it look like that particular animal with a little bit of character as well, too.
Well, she said, you got to understand those animals. The character is either in the eyes or the ears. So she was always experimenting and trying this. And
right.
She'd say, how does this look? And I'd go, that looks pretty good.
Yeah.
Or I'd say, I don't like that. And she said, okay, I'll change it and we'll do this. But she was always experimenting with those mounts before she would finish them up and turn them into the owner. That was her deal.
But what a fantastic job
she did. She was a crazy lady anyway. I call her crazy lady. It's like being married to a pet raccoon. She got into everything. Most of the people said I married her just to keep her from poaching so much. But yeah, she was a good fisherman. She loved those fish. And if there was a 50-hook trot line, she'd have 100 hooks on hers. But anyway, I loved her dearly. And she was a good taxidermist.
She was. She was a very, very special lady as far as I was concerned in so many, 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 many ways. And, you know, a dear friend from the word go.
And she loved to hunt and fish.
And not only did she love to hunt and fish, she was good at it, too.
Yeah, she was. She used to carry earplugs. I gave her a big rifle. She carried earplugs, and people would say, "Why do you have earplugs?" She said, "Because I don't have to listen to him while I'm trying to shoot something." And she'd point at me, and I'd go, "Yeah, that's right."
Yeah, yeah.
Don't argue with that.
No, none whatsoever, my God. As I said, unfortunately, she passed away a few years ago. But what a truly, truly special lady. And so, as I mentioned, in so many different ways. And we had so much fun together at times whenever we got together. And we got the chance to hunt together several times. I remember one time we were down in Webb County. I think one of the first times you and Marcia came down to Loretta, and you know, back then we didn't have many wild hogs.
Must have been that red hog.
And it was the red hog.
I can remember it to this day. You and Marcia are both shouting at me, "Shoot the red hog."
Yes.
I'm saying, "I'm red green colorblind. I don't see a red hog." "Yeah, there is that red hog right there." "Well, that red hog right there doesn't mean anything to me." Finally got him spotted and we got it done. But the interesting fact, if you remember correctly, we just threw that hog in the back of the truck.
We did.
Then we took off, and that evening we had to leave.
Yes.
So we drove into Laredo, Marcia and I, and we got us a motel room, and went to the cafe, and we're going to eat supper. And she's sitting there, and all of a sudden she's squirming like she's got the St. Vitus dance. And I go, "What's the matter with you?" She says, "I don't know." And she starts opening her blouse, and I said, "Well, let's go get it real interesting." And she's picking off ticks. That hog was so full of ticks that they all loved her. So here she is in the restaurant, squirming around, trying to pick off ticks. And I'm going, "You know, these people think we're crazy and probably going to throw us in jail anyway." But all I could do was sit there and laugh and pick them off myself.
Yeah, you mentioned all that. I do remember that hog had a lot of ticks. You know, a lot of times I get tickled as you're talking about that. I was thinking about javelina as well, too. I used to get a bunch of guys come down from different states. And, you know, in Arizona, they're a premium game animal, and they probably are here in parts of New Mexico. And a lot of the photos there for a while were of guys like you see a guy that takes a leopard and he lays it across his shoulders. Well, these guys would come down and they'd shoot a javelina, and they'd say, you know, they want that photograph, you know, with the javelina wrapped around their neck kind of thing. And since we took the photograph, I'd take off and run to the pickup, jump in the truck and lock the doors and roll up the windows. And then I'd open it just enough to say, "Get on back with your javelina," kind of thing. And they go, you know, you can say, "What? Why? And I said, "You're going to figure it out." Well, the adrenaline would start wearing off a bit. All of a sudden, they could smell that very distinctive javelina odor. And then the next thing you know, they're scratching and itching and all this kind of stuff because of the fleas and ticks that are there. Yeah, so
those fleas and ticks, I'd tell those young boys down there, I said, "Garapatos and plumas." You know, yeah. Fleas and ticks.
Yeah.
"Pulgas and garapatos. And don't get near me." Well, we had some wonderful, great times.
We really did.
You know, and looking back on my career, when I was a young man, Larry, my father took me hunting and fishing at every opportunity.
Yes, sir.
Now, I didn't necessarily have a rifle, but I was on the hunting trip.
Right.
And when I was about, I guess, 10, 11 years old, I met my first game warden. A nice gentleman. I can't remember who he was now, but I thought, you know, I think that's the coolest guy I've ever seen. I'm going to be a game warden. And I was. I became a game warden. A lot of people in life, by the time they get to the end of life, they're upset because they didn't enjoy life. I enjoyed every single day. I was a game warden. That's what I wanted to do, and that's what I did for 27 years.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And a lot of good stories, met a lot of different people, good people, bad people. But all in all, wouldn't trade it for the world.
Absolutely. That's why I am. I was very fortunate. And to this day, I cannot wait to get up and go to work. And most people that are my age have now been retired for a fair number of years.
Like me.
Yeah, but you're a little different. You spent time working, guiding and working with different ranchers and all those kind of things. And then anybody that's ever visited your absolutely gorgeous little piece of property out here on the west side of Roswell, New Mexico, knows that you like tractors and you like mechanical things because of the sheds and the barns that I've driven by since we've gotten here. There's more than one in there.
Well, like I said, everybody needs a bulldozer. And that bulldozer is a funny story. I had a rancher that lives over by Carrizosa. That bulldozer belonged to him.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "Ron, would you come over?" I was retired. He said, "Would you build me some roads?" And I said, "Sure. Absolutely. Had never been on a bulldozer in my life. Didn't know the first thing about it. But I went over there, learned how to start it, started building him roads. Got pretty good at it. Built him a lot of roads there on. He came to me one day and he says, "Gonna give you that bulldozer." I said, "Oh, you are? Why?" He says, "Because I bought me a new one." I said, "So you're going to give me a 1947 bulldozer, and then you just bought a 2020 bulldozer that's got all the bells and whistles."
Right.
And I said, "And it takes two people to start this bulldozer of mine." He said, "Yep." But he said, "Nobody knows how to drive it but you." I said, "Well, I do appreciate it, Henry. I appreciate it very, very much."
And when you got on, first time you had no idea how to
I had no idea how to start it. All I knew was there was a key there and there's some handles there. And after a while, I got it figured out. But it's just, I don't know where I came up with this love of equipment, but I guess because I was kind of raised on a farm when I was a young man and drove tractors like most farm boys did. And my grandfather, he was never one to say, "You can't do that." He'd say, "Get out there and learn how." And so I'd go drive a tractor and just got to where they just, when I retired, I thought, "Man, I sure do like the tractors."
Yeah.
Well, I do have a few right now. My oldest one is a 1938 Alice Chalmers.
1938.
And I've got a 38. Wait a minute, I got one older. I got a 1936.
Oh, my goodness.
Forgot about that one.
Oh, my goodness.
But, that's my oldest one. And I don't know how the age is on my newest one. I haven't figured that one out yet.
It's probably not a brand new one, though.
No. These brand new tractors, they leave me in the dust.
Well, now, to probably work on a tractor, you have to be a technician.
Oh, yeah. You got to know
how. In terms of computers.
Yeah, get it hooked up to a computer and let the computer tell you what it is. A tractor needs two things, spark and gas. That's all it needs. If you can figure out why it's not running, it'll be one of those two, normally.
I'll be darned.
I've told you before, I've got an Alice out there. That they always told me, they said, "You can take an Alice tractor, tear it down to the final bolt."
Right.
"Put it all back together, have a bucket full of bolts and parts left over, it'll still run."
It still runs.
And an old Alice man told me that.
Yeah. Well, he knew what he was talking about.
He knew what he was talking about. But growing up and watching those tractors, the first time I ever saw a self-propelled combine, I thought, "My God, what's this world coming to? Can you imagine that kind of
Technology in this equipment, in farming equipment?
I mean, it actually climb up on it and drive it itself, a combine." But anyway, that's after I retired from the game department and taxidermy, that gave me something to,
absolutely,
to do with. I collect, I don't sell. And I tell everybody, I'm not in the habit of making a tractor look like it just came off the showroom. My tractors, all I want to do is put their working clothes back on and let them run. And that's what I do. And I go out there every now and then. I'll climb up on one, start it up, let it run, let it warm up.
Right.
You know, listen to it, turn it off, do it again next month. You know, just like
that. And it keeps them going.
It keeps them going.
It keeps them going. It's kind of like being a person.
That's right.
You know, it's trying to, you got to get up and do something.
If you sit around on the couch all day, that's where they're going to find you.
You were talking about some of your drive. I'm looking at a photo, an older photograph of your great-grandfather, and you were telling me what he did. He came out of where and went to where, and what did he do en route?
His name was Job, and they were moving from Illinois to Oklahoma. And I've got all the paperwork and the newspaper articles and everything else. But when they got ready to move, he sold most everything except a horse.
Except for a horse.
He smuggled the horse onto a train. And they took the train from Illinois to Oklahoma. And when I read that, I thought, how in the world do you smuggle a horse? Number two, does that mean I come from a line of horse smugglers? You know, I've heard of horse thieves and cattle thieves, but never a horse smuggler.
No, that's kind of a
but,
new one.
But I'll take that as part of my lineage.
Absolutely.
But he and his wife, Rebecca, had two sets of twins. And they packed some of them up and on a wagon, and the rest of them, he and my great-grandfather and my grandfather, which is just a child at the time, they rode the train with the smuggled horse. And I kept thinking, where do you hide a smuggled horse?
I have no idea.
How do you feed it? How do you water it? It takes a while in those days to get from Illinois to Oklahoma.
Well, absolutely it does.
And I thought, you know what? History of families is just amazing.
telling
what you'll find.
It really is. But it would be truly interesting to know how he kept that horse watered primarily
fed and hid
the entire way.
Do you put him in a boxcar? You know. How do you get him into the boxcar? How do you get him out of the boxcar? I read that, and I had to reread it twice just to make sure I knew what I was looking at. But it was interesting, you know, you sell the wagon for $2.50, and
yes,
you
sir.
Sell this for that. And went to Oklahoma because that was during the days just before the Oklahoma land rush. So he was looking for property.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
In fact, my grandfather can remember when they moved to that farm, part of their job before they could plow a field was to go out there and remove the old buffalo skulls.
Really?
That they wanted to plow.
Right.
They didn't want to plow them under or around them. But he and my uncle would go load up buffalo skulls in the wagon so they could take down and throw them in the creek.
Oh, my goodness. Wouldn't it be nice to have some of those skulls now,
though,
particularly for that era kind of thing?
Of that era, yeah. Now, I've got a buffalo skull. You haven't seen it. But it's a buffalo skull that came out of a cave in Wyoming that was evidently put there by some Indians.
Yes.
And somehow or another, I wound up with it. But you know me, I got a lot of different collections.
That's one of the things I really enjoy about coming to visit you here, is because in every nook and cranny of the house and of your, and we haven't even been, my wife Mary Ann's with me on this trip. I haven't come back from a DSC New Mexico chapter gala, and we haven't taken her out to the taxidermy shop. We'll do that next time, because even out there, you've been able to collect so many different unique things over the years and so many great things of beauty, particularly in terms, if you like, anything having to do with wildlife and the Old West kind of sort, or all those kind of things.
Wildlife and the Old West have always, well, wildlife, I guess, because I was a game warden and kid and just loved wildlife. You know, I can remember every hunt that I ever had with my father.
Yes.
And when I was young, he liked to fish in the High Pecos Lakes, where that was a 6-mile walk.
Gracious.
And I was little. And if I got tired, he'd tie a rope around my waist, and I better keep up or I got drug up that mountain. But those trips are just, you remember, I just can't tell you how much I enjoy those old trips. Because my dad enjoyed hunting, and I've enjoyed not only hunting, but being a part of the wildlife, basically community, because of being a game warden for the majority of my life. it's just been absolutely tremendous. I've seen things that I've never seen, things that people wouldn't even believe that I've seen.
And probably will never see again as well.
And I will never see again, but they're etched in my memory.
Absolutely, yes, sir.
And to me, that's pretty important. When you get to be as old as I am, you get to looking back on things and going, good Lord of mercy, wasn't that fun? Or, good Lord of mercy, how in the world did I survive that?
And in certain instances, that both those apply to the same thing as well, too.
At the same time, you go, holy mackerel, thank you for looking over me.
Ron, we've got a little time left here, but well, your years as a game warden, what were some of the favorite things that you got to do? I know there are some horrible things involved with being a game warden in terms of having to deal with certain people in certain circumstances. What was kind of the maybe one or two high points of your years as a game warden?
I think looking back on everything, number one would have been being able to help children, young people.
Yes.
Enjoy wildlife, enjoy outdoors. I was stationed in Gallup, New Mexico for a while. Got to know a lot of people that were Navajo and Hopi and Zuni.
Yes,
and getting to know their way of life, their outlook on life, their religion, which is tied real close to the outdoors. I mean, really close. I think those learning experiences were so good to me. I just enjoyed it much. Because those things that you don't learn in books.
No.
Those are things you learn in life or learn by talking to people. I had good friends that were medicine men, and they would tell me stories of potions and stuff that they did. And nowadays, a lot of the people would scoff at that. But I tell you what. Those old medicine men, they knew their history of their tribe, and they knew their nature, and they knew what cured and what didn't.
Yes, sir. And a lot of their history is oral history.
Oh, yes, absolutely. It's like the Navajos. Until a few years ago, there was no written language for Navajo. Navajo is a very, very difficult language. Well, that's why the U.S. military had the code talkers.
That's right.
Because the Japanese could never figure it out. And the Navajos, like, they came up with their own words. And the military boys would say, if they were talking about a tank, that was turtle in Navajo. They would talk about a turtle. Well, nobody else even here could even associate that word with a turtle.
No.
And so they never got known as far as the code talkers were number one. I mean, but you listen to some of those stories and what the hell? I always told people, you know, when I got sick, I either wanted a medicine man or a curandero, which is a Spanish healer.
Yes, sir.
Because they know what's out there and what's right and what's wrong.
Exactly. And two, there's so many natural cures in the various vegetations.
That came from
that kind of thing. Yep. And you know, a lot of modern medicine, too, is based on some of that.
Oh, yes.
But a lot of modern medicine also has scoffed at a lot of that. Yep. Going, no, that'll never work kind of thing. And yet it does.
I've gone, when I lived up there, if I was a little sick or something, I'd be by one of the Navajo medicine men. He'd look at me and he'd go, you're not right. And he'd be over there mixing something and say, take this. And I never hesitated.
No.
Because I know those people know what they're talking about. And a couple of days later, I'd go, hey, not bad.
It worked.
I'm not even going to ask what it was because it might be a toad's hind leg. But, you know, who cares? It worked.
Exactly. You know, who cares?
Learning their way of life and their thoughts. And it just, some of that stuff is fascinating when you get into their way of life. And that was one of my favorite things, was living up there. That, like I said, in helping young people.
Helping young people.
One of the best things I ever did, I was invited to do a television program with a bunch of Muppets, almost like Sesame Street.
Really?
So I thought, well, I don't know how to do this. But I did, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. I'm sitting around for 30 minutes talking to a bunch of hand puppets, and we talked about everything. And it was a lot of fun, and I had a lot of feedback from it, from women saying, my little boy really enjoyed, you know, listening to you.
I can only imagine, Ron.
But it was so much fun, and I thought, you're a grown man sitting around talking to hand puppets. You know, but it worked.
It worked. How fantastic to be able to do that and have that opportunity. Yep. And oh, my goodness.
So God. I've had a different life, shall we say. I got lots of experiences and lots of fun, and it's been great and will continue to be great.
And will continue to be great.
That's the main thing. So, and you look around what I've got, and I sit out there in my, I'll call it my office, and I'll look at some of that stuff I've collected, and I'll go, you know, I can remember every story.
Yes, sir.
Where I got it, when I got it, who was with me. If it's a taxidermy animal, where I harvested the whole story.
All the circumstances.
Yep, everything around it.
Yeah.
I can tell you what the temperature was that day, you know, whether I was freezing to death or burning up. But, you know, and I think that's what life really is to enjoy it. If you cannot enjoy life, then what in the world is there?
You're right.
You know, it just doesn't make sense to me. I see these people that mope around and they complain about everything and they got such a horrible life. And I look at them and go, still breathing, aren't you?
Yes.
If you're still breathing, you can change it.
Absolutely.
Have a good time.
And you can create.
Absolutely you can.
I totally agree. I really do. Ron, we're going to run short on battery tonight, but I'll either come back or give you a call. I want to continue this conversation because there's so many different things to tell about in your career. And we shared several of them together as well, too. But, you know, there's a lot of talk about Fred Bear and the great times of him being the father of modern archery and all that kind
and
of thing.
I got to guide him.
And you got to guide him. And I'll tell you what, we can reconvene this campfire. that's one of the things I want to get into next
time. I'll tell you what, I've guided lots of folks, and that was one fine gentleman. Really enjoyed being around him.
I want to hear that story, and then I know that you did something with the Wild Kingdom guys years ago.
Oh, yeah, we did. Back in the days of Wild Kingdom, I guess we did, five different programs here in New Mexico. We hunted elk. We hunted Audad. We hunted deer. And I've got stories about some of those hunters and how accurate they are. But that part we'll leave out.
Yeah, we'll do that some other. Well, but maybe we can talk about some of those
Ed
things.
Ed Ames recently passed away.
Yes.
So I can talk about him.
That's another one we'll talk about.
If you go hunting with Ed Ames, don't think you're going to have anything to eat for supper. Let's put it that way.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, please join us again here around the campfire. We'll have Ron back on for too very long, and we've got so many stories that he can tell, and I've got a lot of questions for him. So next time we get the opportunity, we'll be right back here on DSC Campfires, and thank y'all so very much for joining us today.
DSC's Campfires has also been brought to you by the Crown Bar in LaGrange, Texas. Habit, our gear, your adventure. The Texas Wildlife Association, Double Nickel Taxidermy, Burnham Brothers Game Calls, and H3 Whitetail Solutions. In Wild Country, rules were not created by man. Don't miss Wild Country, Wednesdays from 7 to 11 p.m. Eastern. Presented by Primos, speak the language. Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.
When you go out there and the fish are where you think they are, any one of these casts could be the bite. It's the most exciting fishing that I know, right here at Hawks Cave.
Oh, that's awesome.
Experience the best saltwater fishing the world has to offer. Don't miss Thursdays with Saltwater Experience. Brought to you by Golden Boat Lifts. Every Thursday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV. The destination for outdoor entertainment.